Welcome to the Psycho Vertical podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick, and out and about today. You'll have to apologise for any wind on the microphone. I tried to caveat going back to the house to sort it out. So, where are we? We're in just walking into town to do some writing type stuff, and I'm walking down the road where I live, and I can see the Burren, which is like a big big limestone kind of, is it a mountain? It's like a big thing that sticks out into the hill. It's kind of famous in Ireland. There's lots of hard like rock climbs over there next to the sea, and it's where J.R. Tolkien, apparently, he got some of inspiration for Lord of the Rings, because there's like caves and stuff over there, and I think the idea of like a hobbit, is it a hobbit? Anyway, one of those things, he's got this kind of, that kind of thing, and thing of road. So weird in Ireland, it's so wet, but they don't have any bus stops. It's like someone stood there, you know, stood there with a mask on in like the middle of fucking nowhere, and it's kind of, there's no bus stops, so it's not a good place to sit around waiting for a bus. Anyway, so I'm walking down to the edge of the, I'm going to traverse along the coastline to get away from the sound of the road so you can hear me. And so this is like Galway Bay. I'm looking out onto Galway Bay. So on the other side of the bay is the Burren, and I'm on the sort of the Galway side. And I can see the boat heading out with the tourists, probably loads of Spanish people, some Americans, off to go and look, off to the Aran Islands. And it kind of goes out to the Aran Islands. It also goes out to the Cliffs of Moher. That's featured in Harry Potter. So there's lots of film references. So the weather is... it's like a podcast for like blind people. My name is Andy Kirkpatrick. He, him. I'm wearing a... I'm actually wearing a swan dry. If any Kiwis out there, you'd be like, struth. The Kiwis don't say struth anyway, but they'd be like, oh, it's interesting. No. So swan dry is a, you probably know, I'm like walking through loads of spiky plants. Got some good blackberries here. Swan dry is like a woolly coat that's, it's kind of made out of wool, and it's like sort of two layers on your body. It's on the body and a bit on the arms. Like the inner layer is wool, but it's got something else mixed in with it, some man-made fibre. And oh God, it's gonna stop being windy. Is it too windy? I can hear some kind of animal making a noise. I don't know, I'm not sure where it's coming from. Oop. I'm trying to focus on my microphone and not fall over. There's not really a path here, it's just like loads of rocks. See if I can move around. See, I've put my microphone upside down. Put it on the inside. Maybe a bit better. Yeah, we'll get out of the wind in this in a minute. So swan dry, it's like a jacket. It's kind of long, it goes down to your, just to your knees, basically. And it's got lanolin. It's got the lanolin in it, which I think you put the lanolin back into the wool, I think by mixing it with paraffin or something. And then you sort of wash it in the lanolin, or you soak it in the lanolin. And it makes it kind of water, not waterproof, but I don't know what it does to it, but it basically, like here, it's very wet, so you wear, you know, you wear waterproofs quite a lot. So a lot of people be wearing, like, you know, Gore-Tex jackets and that kind of stuff. And ideally here, you'd want to wear like quite long waterproofs, because, you know, you just get wet. Your legs, your trousers get wet the whole time. So I tend to walk around most of the time in my Crocs, which are highly fashionable, and shorts, even in the winter time, which again is probably a bit of a Kiwi thing. But it actually, you know, your bare legs dry a lot faster than your trousers do. So it looks a bit weird, but it's actually much, much more practical. And Crocs dry a lot quicker than a pair of trainers or a pair of shoes. So your Swan Dry, it's like, instead of wearing a waterproof jacket, you wear just wear your Swan Dry. And I've been out in like pretty hellacious kind of weather. It's not like super windproof, but that is actually probably a bonus, because the wind blowing through it to some degree actually stops, it kind of dries it out a little bit, stops it getting too warm, stops it getting, you know, kind of remove some of the moisture out of it. So being wool, even when it's wet, it kind of feels kind of comfortable. And you generally wear something underneath it that's also wool, like a wool, you know, wool jumper, wool, you know, wool shirt or whatever. And like, as long as you're not doing anything super energetic, it works quite well. Like, it's not good for, it isn't really practical for outdoor stuff, unless you're like, you know, bushcrafty kind of things, because it's too heavy, it's too bulky if you're not wearing it. So it's what, have you ever seen like the Hunt for the Wilder People? That's what Sam thingy wears, the your main man wears, a Swan Dry. I think he has like a jumper underneath it. So little, and yeah, so it's a, but this Swan Dry, like Swan Dry were like a classic New Zealand company, a bit like Macpac, but then they kind of went offshore, started making stuff in China. And this jacket is a full length zip version, because I thought it'd be easier to vent, which it kind of is. But you can see that whoever designed this version of a Swan Dry, and I expect it's probably the same with the other versions of Swan Dries, they didn't really understand what it was for, because it's got like cotton pockets. So that means that when it's piss wet through, you know, it just soaks up all the water in the pockets, and the neck, the thing that you close around the neck, is too tight, and just loads of little things where, you know, you cut corners to save, you know, probably a few pence, but it really undermines the jacket. And like, if you wear a hip belt, if you've got like a rucksack on, or if you're wearing like a belt for some reason, it kind of goes exactly where the pockets are, so the pockets need to be a little bit higher. And just little, like, if I made something like this myself, you probably could, you'd make it very different. There's a company in the UK, I think they're called like Bison Bushcraft or something, and they make some really good sort of quality sort of versions of, you know, this, that kind of idea. And it's, they're very popular with farmers and people sort of working in the outdoors, because they're very tough, like they're not affected by being cut, or, you know, spiky plants or that kind of thing. And they're just generally a lot more comfortable than wearing waterproof, which is always kind of a bit grim. I guess in Ireland and the UK, the classic thing is probably like a barber jacket, and which, like a barber jacket's is waterproof, but it's not breathable. But it has generally has like a lining that's absorbing all the sweat. So you wear a barber jacket, woolly jumper. That's probably, do you? So Anyway, so yeah, so there's a bit of good weather out in the south behind the Burren, but it's I'm not sure it's going to come this direction, so it's spitting a little bit. So I've not walked very far. This sounds like a Radio 4 kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, oh, I want to talk about the lack of diversity of pebbles on this beach. There's far too many white pebbles on this beach. Anyway, so yeah, I've come to the section of this walk which is next to some really ugly concrete sort of building, which has got like things for machine guns sticking out of it, and I'm guessing either the British built this during the First World War because they were afraid that the Germans might come into Galway Bay and invade, or maybe it was built by the Irish in the Second World War to make sure the British didn't come round. don't know what they're gonna really do. Yeah, it's kind of ugly. Kind of thing you'd have on Grand Designs, where people would turn an ugly industrial building into like an ugly industrial house instead. So I actually did this podcast yesterday. It was very, very good, but then I realised that it wasn't recording, so I'm using some other software on my computer. So as soon as I'm walking into town, instead of just not bothering to do any more podcasts. I've not done a podcast for quite a long time. I do apologise. I thought I'd kill two birds with one stone. Well, I don't believe in killing birds with stones. So what's been going on? I've been kind of careful here. My Crocs are kind of not ideal for walking on this terrain. I used to work at an outdoor shop. I remember Richie Patterson, who was the assistant manager, he once was selling someone some Teva sandals, and he said how they were good for water work, and that kind of haunted him for the rest of his life in that work in that shop. So yeah, it's a bit like the word platform, isn't it? Like people use the word platform, but these like Crocs are not a good platform for beach work on these stones. I'm going to break my leg down here. Speaking of blackberries, I actually made blackberry jam recently. Blackberry jam is also the code word for blowjob. So I kind of often you need to work some kind of, you know, just fancy some, you want some blackberry jam, you know, that kind of stuff. What's that joke? There's this man's wife's in a coma, and the doctor comes and says to the husband, says, there's only one thing left to try, and that's oral sex. And the guy's like, really? He said, yeah, like, it has been known to work occasionally. So the husband's like, well, I'll give it a go. So he goes into the room, he comes back 10 minutes later, he said, it's not working, just choking. So, yeah, so I made some blackberry jam, which I don't know if you've made jam before, but it's basically 4 cups of blackberries and 7 cups of sugar. So Noah, my son, is like absolutely loves this blackberry jam. So I think it's not to do with the blackberries. I think it's just to do with all the sugar. But it's kind of good, like walking along, getting all your, you know, blackberries and stuff. Kind of, there's a lot of blackberries around here because there's lots of blackberry bushes. So where was I? So yes, I've not done a podcast for a while. I probably look like something out of some sort of priest walking along down here, you know, covering my microphone up. Very don't get so many priests these days. I think the average age of a priest in Ireland is something like 74 or something, or 64. It's bloody old. So I think it's kind of, who was it? Someone said that you that we all have like a God-shaped hole in our lives, like a lot of people, all the atheist people. But I've also like recently heard two, you know, people I'd really, really respect and would not imagine to be religious, actually saying they are religious, but in a kind of a way, like they don't necessarily believe in God and creation or whatever, but they kind of believe in the idea of like codifying, you know, good advice, you know. So yeah, it's like the old thing. It's like the old thing, like you might as well believe in God and heaven, you know, like if and live that way. And if you die, you know what happens. It doesn't matter if you're wrong, you know. But if you're right, you know, it's probably worth it. But I think it's I think a better way to look at it is having, you know, is living to these sets of, you know, these ideas that are codified. I think Brett Weinstein was saying, like, what's the name for the God, the Jewish, anyway, whatever his name is, you know, doesn't like you having a shit in your camp, you know, it's not good. So if you're like, oh, God tells you not to have a shit, you know, in your camp, you know, it's a quite a good thing to follow. Same as like not drinking, not coveting asses and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just reading. For some reason someone recommended I read some like Charles Bukowski, because I think he maybe thought I had a similar outlook on life. I'm not sure why. I think maybe it's because I tend to, when I write anything, I generally just write it and I don't worry too much about spelling or, you know, my eyesight's not that good. It's getting, my eyes has got quite bad recently, so I've actually like often write things but I can't really see what I'm writing, which kind of compounds my lack of spelling ability. So often when I read it back, it doesn't make any sense because of the words are all wrong. But anyway, but it's that idea of just write it. Don't overthink it. Don't like, you know, don't worry too much about what other people think. Like you kind of do, often you're doing it for yourself in order to kind of exercise something out of yourself, something you want to say. Anyway, so apparently Bukowski was a little bit like that. So I got a book of poems, which actually, I'm not that into poetry, but it was actually good because they weren't really poems really. And that's the best kind of poem. And then I started reading Post Office, which I remember when I was living in my squat days, that was that book like those people read. But because the kind of people who read them, you know, I just thought it was going to be like, you know, some kind of, I don't know, like listening to Velvet Underground. It was actually not that bad. It was actually good. Anyway, so I eventually got around to reading it, so I do apologise to anybody who told me to read it. I mean, it's very good, but it's definitely not a modern novel for the modern generation. There's like a lot of stuff in there that's kind of, I wouldn't say it's borderline raping someone, but it probably is. But, you know, you can't really tell what's true, because he was basically an alcoholic. You can't really tell what's really true and what's not true. But it's an interesting book. Anyway, it's just like, maybe it's semi-fictionalised, I don't know, but it's just this guy who works in the post office, post service, like delivering mail and stuff. So, and yeah, interesting book to read. Although I do find recently, I was reading the James Ellroy, one of his books recently, and I don't know what, maybe it's because I'm tired, but they tend to kind of bleed into your dreams. So when you're semi asleep, you know, you've kind of got all this, the language of the story, like in your head, which is, you know, depends what kind of book you're reading, I guess. So yeah, it's anyway, so what's been going on in my life? What's going on? My mum died. That wasn't good. It's funny, like when you're, I think you're always kind of expecting, you know, you're in this like period of your life where everything's like great, but you kind of, you know that those days are kind of numbered because your parents are going to die, you know, people are going to start. It's a bit like, you know, you go through a period of your life where everyone's getting into relationships. Then there's a period where people are getting married, then they're having babies, then they're getting divorced. And, you know, but you know, you've got this period in your life where, you know, people who mean something in your life, like your friends, but also your family, are going to start getting ill and dying and stuff, and all the kind of negative, you know, all the kind of the payback for all the good stuff, I guess, is going to start happening. So I guess I've been, you know, waiting. Like, my mum was like 74, but she was like, you know, pretty healthy. She was like the, you know, sort of part-time, like co-parenting really with my sister, who's got like two kids, and like super busy person. And so yeah, she just died, just like sat down on the settee and died. So they had to have an autopsy, and she died of a blood clot. So went to her heart. So why that happened, why she got a blood clot, I wouldn't like to say. But so which in a way, like when I got told, you know, it's like one of those, you think, like I always thought my dad, when my dad died, he would just do it, you know. If you found out he was dying, he wouldn't want to be like a burden to anybody or cause a fuss, so he'd just go and top himself, you know, probably swim out into the Irish Sea or something. I always thought my mum would, you know, she would die like most people do, you know, it'd be like a long drawn out kind of thing. But the thing that was weird, like, you have to kind of rationalize these things. So her mum died of Alzheimer's. Well, she got Alzheimer's and then eventually died of something, you know, probably relating to it. And you know, that was like very long, horrible thing. And I think my mum was always really afraid that she would get Alzheimer's, you know. So I think as you're getting older, when your brain starts not working so well, you're always, you know, like thinking, is this it? Is this the end, beginning of the losing my mind? So she would have liked to, you know, she would have liked the idea of just going without a fuss. But there's so many, I know there's like so much, it's a bit like when people commit suicide, like the reason it's such a fuck you is it doesn't give anyone an opportunity to say the things that they, well, especially not if you commit suicide, you don't get the opportunity to say the stuff you thought that may have made a difference. It's too late. And I think when someone just dies, like my mum, you know, there's you know, you have all this, it's all guilt basically, isn't it? It's like suicide or whatever. It's like, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that and everything else. I think it's interesting. You often notice how little people want to interfere or get involved in things, like other people, well, I guess other people's problems. But I think often when it's your family, like when it's blood, I do think sometimes you need to get involved in these kind of things. Sometimes it makes it worse. Like some people are just like, they're not attention seeking, but they you know, they kind of get hooked on the drama, you know. But anyway, so finding out your mum died was kind of, you know, sad. So she had a funeral. It was on like the hottest day of the century, where it was. I think it was like 42 degrees, I think, where we were. So it was even hotter than they were saying it was on the telly. So it was, you know, all these people come who you've not seen, you know, It's a bit like when I was like the photographer of my ex-wife's wedding. You know, I met all these people I've not seen since I got married to her. So, so all these people appear if you've not seen forever, and you know, like most of them look like bloody ancient. You know, can't believe they're still alive and stuff. And a few like friends of mine and stuff like turned up. So it was a very nice. If you're gonna have a funeral, it was as good as you're gonna. It wasn't as good as the Queen's, but it was very nice. Like afterwards, we were like, "What, you know?" They're like, "What do you want to do with all the flowers?" And we were like, "Well, what do you usually do?" And they're like, "Well, we don't usually get these many flowers." So that's kind of nice. So, well, yeah, not many funny things happened, but one funny thing was, so Vanessa and Noah were there, but Noah's like really into, he really likes blowing out candles. He's like nearly two. So in the church was like some big picture of a candle or something, not real candles. It was like a real church, it was like a crematorium. So he starts like pointing at the candle, like really loudly, very inappropriate. So anyway, so Vanessa took him out and he went like walking around the graveyard, whatever you call it. Anyway, so he like ran off and he ran through some door and she was like following into the building. And she suddenly found all these like TV screens, so she could see what was going on. So oh, this is good, I had to sit here and watch it. And then she suddenly realised that she was actually in the crematorium, like where they do all the burning and everything else. And so yeah, you know, all the doors were open because it was so hot. So look, anyway, so it would have been quite funny if he'd like crawled through into the service through the hatch where the body where the thing goes. So my mum would like that. So yeah, it's funny though, your mum, you know, there's people in your life where they're such like a constant in a way, even if you don't really talk to them as much as you should, that they're kind of always in your head. You can hear them talking and stuff. So God, I'm trying to fight my way through a load of bracken here. It's weird there's like no path along here. I don't know. I think Irish people just aren't really into walking and stuff. They're probably just pissing the rain most of the time. Like even on the mountains. Like we went up to went out walking the other day, went up to like quite a popular spot up in the Connemara kind of mountain range. And there's a pass, and you can go up to this, you walk up this trail up to this, it's basically like, it looks like an alpine hut, but it's actually just a church, like a little, you know, like a, there's a big rock, overhanging rock, and there must have been some kind of like pagan thing in there, and then it turned into like a, you know, a Christian thing, and then they built like a kind of a weird little chapel-y kind of thing. So we kind of walked up there. And then and where this col is, you can sort of head up into some quite steep, high mountains. It's part of the, what's it called? It's called the, not Lugalor, what's it called? It's called the Montex. It's like a ridge of mountains, mountain thing. And there's a thing called the Montex Challenge, which is where you start one end and you kind of work it all the way to the other end. Which would be fucking hard. I've never done it, but there's a lot of elevation, a lot of ascent and descent to do it. So anyway, yeah, so we head up to this place, head up to this chapel, have our packed lunch, and then we'd like head up the ridge onto one of these onto one of the Montarks. And there's just like no path whatsoever. It's like so bizarre. Like it'd be like being in, you know, one of the most interesting mountains in the lakes or something, or Wales. There's no path. You're just in the bog at the start, and then you're just zigzagging around on this like hillside. So it's really cool. But it's kind of hard work as well. Like when I got like Noah on my back, so it's good, kind of good training. And then you have to, you know, get yourself back down again, and you have to sort of just work out what part of the hill, you know, you can get down. And again, there's no paths. So it's kind of a good day out, good adventure. It's a private property, no entry. Oh, where do I go? Bastards. Why is that private property? It's like it's just a big fucking field full of grass. It's not, you can't even bloody do anything with it. Anyway, I'm going to have to climb down here. I'm very obedient. Surprised I was so bolshy about the whole lockdown stuff, because I'm very obedient. God, this is fucking lethal. God. Problem with Crocs is the bottoms are fucking lethal, but the insides are lethal as well, because your feet like slide around inside them. They're definitely not ideal for this terrain. If I die here, yeah, this is my last will and testament. So anything else been happening? I was in the lakes. So I went to this funeral, and then went over to, for some reason, went to Dumfries for like a week, which is kind of for some reason. And then I went to the lakes. Was in the lakes for a few weeks, and I was there in the winter time, like in January or sometime. And we stayed at this place that like Vanessa's grandparents. They lived in Morecambe, and they found this like ramshackled old like mill building. This must have been in the 70s or whatever. And you kind of renovated, end up moving there, and now this old building is kind of owned by all Vanessa's family. So we go over and go and stay there. But it was fucking freezing. Like, it's really, really cold, and there's like, you can hear there's like bats like living in the wall, and there's mice and stuff. So it's a bit like Withnail and I, that kind of vibe. It looks like really cool. But with Noah, we couldn't, like, the only heating would be putting on the stove, like the wood stove in the kitchen, and that's meant to like heat everything else up in the house, like the living, you just live in the kitchen basically in the winter time, but the pipe goes up through the bedroom, that would warm the bedroom up. We didn't have a fire guard, so we couldn't put the fire on, so it was fucking miserable. Probably a good like insight into how it's going to be this winter. So yeah, so you need to get those jumpers on, get those thermal bottoms, highly recommended. It's funny, like in like Alaska and places like that, you're really into, you know, like dungarees, you know, like sort of is it Carhartt or what it's called, what's that brand, you know, into like these heavyweight like dungarees. And you can see really, like, you know, like solopettes. They're really good bit of clothing for the winter. If you live somewhere cold, if you have to like sit around in your cold house. So yeah, like one piece kind of base layer are good as well, because you haven't got all the seams in the middle, like a Farmer John, not Farmer John. What's it called? Union suit. It's called, isn't it, in America? Like a the kind of thing you used to get sewn into at the beginning of the winter. In the olden days, that's a good bit of kit if you're having to live somewhere cold. So yeah, but our house we're here, it's not that warm. Like, it was actually built by Vanessa's dad over about 20 years. It was like some land that basically no one wanted, so it didn't cost very much, like 30 years ago. And they slowly built this house on it, but no one ever lived in it. And it's just very cold. It was very cold. Like, he really is really obsessed with ventilation for some reason. I guess maybe it's to do with damp, but it was like fucking freezing in there. It was one of those houses where it's kind of colder inside than it is outside. So it's good. Anyway, good training. And we have like oil. You have like an oil. Your heating is from oil. So most people in the UK live in cities, so they don't know oil, how it works. You know, you have in the countryside, you have like a big green plastic thing in your garden, and they come along and they fill it up with oil. And the house was actually heated when we first moved in. It just had a range, like an auger thing, that ran off oil. So you would just run that And that was the idea, was that that also heated your water and it heated the house and whatever. But I think when we the first winter, like when Noah was born, we had the heating on a lot. And in the first, basically in 1 month, all the oil went, and it was like 500 euros of oil just went in 1 month. And we're like, holy shit, like, this, what are we going to do? Like, oh my God. So then we filled up the oil, and then we were like really, really careful. And again, in about a month and a bit, all the oil had gone. Maybe there was a leak, I don't know. And so it was like fucking hell. Like, so anyway, so we had to like, it was kind of, it's probably a system, a range probably works quite well in the past when you didn't have, you know, when you had, if you had a really small house, and you were cooking, you probably just put the range on. You probably just get heat off it when you were cooking your tea or cooking your breakfast. But you wouldn't have it on in between. And so yeah, if you had to get like a different sort of boiler kind of, I don't want to trouble you with all my troubles, but you know. So it's, but yeah, but it's kind of, it's, so I guess we had a bit of an insight into fuel poverty early on. So, but since then we've tried to get the house more. We had like a real mouse problem. Like when I was on tour, the house got overrun with mice, and someone said, if you can see one mice, there's like 100 mice, which is probably good advice, you know, because I think the first time we ever saw a mouse in that house, we managed to catch it, and we drove, you know, 10 miles away and released it. So it was a humane, you know, humane, probably eaten by a rat or something, or a cat. And but probably there was, you know, there's probably like 1,000 mice in the house. And you're like, oh my God, it's come back. How did it get back here? Amazing. So basically why we had so many mice was when the house was never really finished, but there were just like loads of like holes in the house where the mice could all like come in the winter time. So we've filled it in. We've got a bit of a weird thing where Vanessa bought one of that expanding foam spray, and there was like a hole, and she just like didn't really realise how much that foam expands. She basically sprayed almost the entire thing down this hole, and now you've got this like huge big like cancerous growth growing outside of our house because it just kind of expanded out. So anyway, so I should get on to, oh yeah, but I was going to say actually when I was in the Lake District, I was in the climber's shop. Like in the past, I used to be, you know, I used to be kind of well known, like a D celebrity climber. So I'd often, you know, go into the climbing shop, or there'd be, you know, you'd be spotted in the lakes, like, are you handicapped Patrick? And these days I always say like, oh, I used to be, which is kind of a play on Vanessa once met Hans Florin, who's climbed El Cap 100 times, on a ledge on El Cap. And she's like the kind of person, she's easily starstruck. That's how I managed to marry her. So she's like, oh, are you Hans Florin? And he goes, I tried to be, which I thought was quite good. She thought it sounds a bit of a knobhead, but I thought that was quite good. So was it, there's that, actually Tom Baker, a really good book to read, highly recommended, is Tom Baker's autobiography. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's very good. Tom Baker was the guy who played Doctor Who, and he's also in lots of other things. But he began life as he grew up in Liverpool, like kind of working class kind of family, and then he actually went to be a monk. So he went to some monastery where he had a vow of silence, and you weren't even allowed to look up. So he said he spent the whole time identifying people by their feet, by their sandals. And then after a few years, he realised he just couldn't hack it. So yeah, he ended up leaving, became an actor instead. It was a great book. So that, you know that joke where there's like a guy, a monk, takes a vow of silence, and he can only say like two words every Christmas. So the first Christmas comes round, he goes to the abbot, and the abbot says, what would you like to say, my son? And he says, bed hard. So he goes away. Another year goes past, Christmas comes around, he goes to the abbot and he goes, food bad. And he goes away. Another Christmas comes along, he goes in, he says, room cold. And after 4 years, he goes there, and the abbot says, what would you like to say, my son? He goes like, I leave. And he says, well, to be honest, I'm glad you are, because you've never done anything. You never stop complaining. So, but Tom Baker had this thing where he was somewhere and some person, like, old woman was like, oh, did you used to be Tom Baker? And I still am, madam, however it is. I can't do a Tom Baker voice. So anyway, I was in the climber shop, and someone was, one of the guys on the counter was like, oh, are you Andy Kirkpatrick? I was like, I used to be. And he was like, oh, my mum's your biggest fan. And I thought he's taking the piss here. And he got me to write, like, do a little note, do a little autograph. Like, she said, oh, she thinks your podcast is the best podcast in the world or something. So, like, get a better taste in podcasts. So this is dedicated to that guy's mum. I can't remember what your name is, but you know you are, special person. So where am I now? I'll tell you where I am. So I'm now actually down, walking along the village. There's like an old harbour thing here. I think the harbour was built, a lot of these harbours were built by the English, the British, as a way of trying to increase trade, or, try and help the local inhabitants get out of, get out of poverty and things. They're very good, the old Brits, apart from I think one of these days we're gonna look back and say they weren't that bad. Their hearts are in the right places. So but I think when the Romans came to Ireland, they called it Hibernia, which means like asleep, basically, because they felt like everyone was asleep. So I guess they're probably just getting in from the rain, I expect. So I'm walking along some big wall here towards the harbour's very small. It's not it's not a deep harbour, so it dries out. So there's lots of like smelly old boats in there most of the time. Little pub here where you can get very expensive, actually. You get like food. I'm actually walking into further along the coast. I'm sure there's anything else going on. I'm trying to finish this book, On the Line book about top rope soloing, and I really need to, that's thing in life, it's more important, the most important thing in life is not what you do, it's what you don't do. Like, one thing I really need to use that, think about that with my own writing stuff, because I basically start a book and I get so far into it that I can't really stop because I've invested too much time. But I just realised that I'm just not really, I don't really understand how much work is involved in writing something, especially a book where you have to like draw the illustrations and everything else. So it was going to be like a smallish, but it was actually going to be part of rewriting Me, Myself and I, and trying to integrate a load of stuff about top rope soloing. But I soon realised that the amount of work involved in just that, in just writing the top rope bit, it needed to be in a separate book. And also a lot of the stuff would just be confusing to have them in the same book, because you're covering all the stuff about like the different kind of devices that you could use. I cover specific devices, but you're also talking about general how different devices work, like eccentric devices and lever devices and all that kind of stuff, which would just confuse it if it came into, like lead soloing. So I've actually reduced the price, because the price of Me, Myself and I, it was always quite expensive, because it was like a book which, I didn't think that many people would ever buy it. So if you're going to put the effort in, it had to be worth the time. So I think it's like 10 quid now on the Gumroad, because I'm kind of aware that eventually I'm going to have to do another version, because everything in it is basically about, it's all about silent partners, which you can't buy anymore, so it's kind of, a lot of it doesn't really, you know, it needs kind of updating. Anyway, so yes, I'm trying to get this book finished. But I only kind of work 3 days a week. So, well, work, I have 3 days a week when I'm not on child duty and things. Oh yeah, that's it, that was some news. I'm having another baby. We are having another baby. Well, Vanessa's having a baby. Don't know whose it is, don't know where it came from, but I will, like Noah, I shall treat him, her, like my own. So that's good now. I'll have like two sets of kids. So I'll have one of each, you know, like boy, girl, and hairdresser. No, that'll be three kids. That was actually quite a funny un-PC joke back in the day, but now you could have one of each, couldn't you? You'd probably have to have like 15 kids to have one of each these days. So yeah. So that's cool. So that baby's coming along soon. Month, 8 weeks or something. So that could be an excuse for not doing any podcasts, but that's not true. It's just I just haven't. So that'll be interesting. Like when you have one child, it's a bit of a struggle to try and retain your normal life, but. You know, when you have two, people always start telling you, like, oh, God, you think one's bad? Oh, wait till you got two. And, oh, God. It's a bit like, you know, if someone said, like, oh, God, have you been kicked in the balls? Oh, God, it's so painful. Oh, you're not going to get picked. It's like, yeah, I kind of get the impression of being kicked in the balls is not very nice, but you don't have to keep telling me about it. So it's a bit like that. But I'm sure it'll be what it'll be. There'll be good things, there'll be tough things, but that's life. It's the, you gotta get those kids in. There was something like, America is gonna lose like 20% of its population for each decade or each generation, because the lack of kids. It's even worse in Europe, even worse in China. I think only Africa is like the only real country. I think Nigeria's got like 300 million people or something. I think, you know, they always said that like this century would be like a Chinese century. I think they're probably wrong. I think it could well be like an African century, maybe, or definitely the next one. Well, everyone's going to be black basically, so everyone's going to, you know, the Anglo-Saxons are going to be thin on the ground, they're going to be like a minority. So all those people going who love minorities and keep going on about them all the time, they'll be a minority soon. All the people like think are minorities, they're going to be the majority. So they'll be interesting to see how that turns out. So this is supposed to be about, not about me. So I should. I haven't got my computer here because I'm walking along. So I have got things I'm supposed to talk about. People have sent me various questions about exciting topics like prussic loops and stuff like that. Lanyards. Remember the lanyards? I will get to it one day. But I had a question from, I won't use his real name. I think his real name is Hank. But I'll think of something. I think of another name, and I'll edit this out later on if I can be asked. So Hank, he's American. He's an army vet. I don't know if that means he's a vet, as in he was in the army, or he's a vet in the army. Now, what do you do if you're a vet in the army? It'd be really confusing. You must have a different kind of. Are you like a non-vet? Oh, you're a vet, I don't know. So anyway, he was asking me probably quite a common question from keen people. It was about expeditions. How do you fund expeditions? And hopefully I've probably covered this topic before, but I'll cover it one more time. And he was saying, like, how, where do you get like 10,000, you know, £10,000 from, $10,000 to pay to go on expedition? And his main focus though seemed to be Yosemite, Patagonia, those kind of places. So as I've said many times, like if you're paying for it yourself, it's not an expedition, it's a holiday. Like the word expedition is just like histrionics, basically. It's you're just trying to make it into something it isn't. You're just going on holiday, and once you realise you're just going on holiday, it makes it a lot easier to get your head around how you're going to do it. Like an expedition is something where you've got like loads of like poor people carrying your shit and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and you're dancing with them on your Instagram and saying, oh, they're so amazing and they're so happy and so smiley, you know, on their $2 a day. I'm always kind of wary of poor people who smile all the time. You know, like people, you know, see people in Nepal or whatever, because a lot of smiling, like when you bare your teeth, that's kind of, it's got a double kind of meaning. And I think the more you smile, the more likely you are to just random violence, or suddenly lose your shit and start killing people or beating you up or whatever. And like if you ever go to like Sweden, you know, like no one smiles. You know, they're the most like civilized people in the world. And well, I've just voted in some, you know, far right party, so maybe they're not civilized at all. So anyway, but you know, if in Sweden, if you're walking along and you pass someone on a trail, and you go, hi there, they go, do I know you? You know, they're very unsmiley people. Same with like Finnish people, like they're just totally sort of like poker faced. And he was like, I'm sure I've told the joke before. There's that joke about the, oh no, you're walking through Helsinki and you say to a Finnish person, excuse me, do you know where the bus station is? And they say, yes. So the other version is you go for a drink with a Finn and you go, cheers. And they say, are we drinking? Are we talking? So smiley people. I think you just got to be a little bit wary. It's definitely wary of elevating people in poverty as being like noble or whatever. I'm sure they would rather not be carrying all your shit with the Baltoro Glacier, you know, in their trainers, and they'd rather just be like farming or something. But that's the way, you know, they looked out. They got born in, you know, in the wrong place. That's life. So anyway, that's the first thing, is understand what's an expedition and what's a holiday. Now, an expedition is a holiday you don't pay for. So if, say, National Geographic, say you're a scientist, you're a glaciologist or something, and National Geographic get in touch with you and say, we're doing this climbing trip to Greenland with Hazel Finlay and Alex Honnold, and they're just going to go there and climb some shit. I'm going to make a program out of it, and we're going to sell it to all the networks. I'm going to make loads of money out of it. We're going to ship loads of shit out there, have helicopters and planes and all that kind of stuff, you know. We'll get them to walk around, you know, with sledges, but that's just for the camera. We'll just fucking fly all that shit in with a big helicopter. And but we need to take a scientist with us, because we need, you know, we need to offset our carbon bullshit by having a scientist. So we'd like you to come on our climbing holiday. You don't have to do anything. We're just gonna lower you down a crevasse, maybe get a picture of you with a test tube. You could tie a sock onto a piece of string and like swing it around your head or something. We don't care about the fucking science, but we just need you to be there just for, you know, due diligence. So that's an expedition for that person. That's you know, that's not a holiday. If you're being paid for it as well, I'm saying this to she, because I don't like the idea that all scientists are men. Is that, you know, if the scientist is getting paid for it, then it's just a job. It's not an expedition. It's just a job. You know, like you don't get like Sherpas going, oh, I'm off on expedition. No, they're just off carrying your shit around. It's like, that's their job. So there's a job, expedition, and a holiday. So if you're asking the question, then what you're doing is you're going on holiday. Now, like, you can either go on an expensive holiday or a cheap holiday, and you can either go on an expensive climbing trip or you can go on a cheap climbing trip. Now, the first thing you need to cut out is all the, you know, all the money spent on poor people carrying all the shit around. So you don't want to be going anywhere. Like, maybe you could pay for a horse to carry something because they're cheaper. But, you know, you want to go somewhere unless you've got loads of money or you're on your climbing holiday stroke work stroke expedition, where you can go there for months and months and months. You know, you want to get there as soon as possible. Because the more time you spend not being there, the more time you're spending probably travelling or, you know, staying in hotels and stuff. So the ideal place is where you get there as soon as possible. And you want to be able to get there on just commercial flights. You don't want to be, you know, like getting Russian nuclear powered icebreaker to get you to your holidays. Looks like there's kind of bear tracks on this beach. I'm sure they're not. So you basically want to be on a two bag trip. Wait, all you have is two bags, because that's what you can get on a plane. You know, you want, you know, rucksack, you're going to, you know, big rucksack, expedition rucksack, and then you want your hold all with all your other shit that you can have, you know, and then you want your day rucksack that you're going to have as hand luggage, and that's what you want, basically. So you can just stick that on a plane, stick in the boot of a taxi, stick it on top of a bus, tie it to the side of a donkey. You know, that kind of approach is the way to do it. So, you know, you just got to be, you're not going on like a siege expedition where you can be fixing loads of ropes and all that kind of stuff. That's where you get more into like a big wall kind of thing, where like a big wall trip, you're probably going to need, you know, a little bit more stuff. So, but the one thing to remember is that although you're funding this trip yourself, like when you're there, you're not necessarily, you know, the money you're spending getting there, once you're there, you're there. Hopefully you're not spending any more money. And you could well find that the amount of money, you might save money because you're not spending any money when you're on the mountain. So if you go to Patagonia, you know, you're going to have to pay to get, you know, to get to the... You're gonna have to pay to get to the mountains. You're gonna have to get a plane to Buenos Aires, and you have to get like internal flight to El Chalten or one of those places, or Calafate or any one of those places. Then you're gonna have to maybe pay someone. Maybe you have to stay in a hostel. Maybe you know, you can't. I don't think people camp so much there anymore. Anyway, you've got some costs, but they're not too bad. Depends on what the exchange rate is. Like, it used to be a really expensive place to go, but I'm guessing it isn't anymore because of the exchange rate. But when you're in the mountains, you know, you're not spending any money. So the same as if you decide to, you know, go and climb in Greenland. Like, it's going to be, you're going to have a, like, the flights from some places aren't too bad to get to Greenland, but then you have to pay someone to get you in somewhere, drop all your stuff off. You're gonna have to ship your food, probably, if you got special food. You know, all that's adding up. You're gonna have to pay someone probably to sort out all the shit. Like, there's the more complex your trip, the more you have to like pay people to fix all the shit that happens along the way. You know, once you're on a trip where you've got like liaison officers and you know, all those kind of cook and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's like you are like getting into the 10 grand kind of category. But if you were going to like Alaska, like if you want to get into that kind of thing, like, I still think like getting dropped off, you know, at the Talkeetna Glacier. And, you know, if you got as much time as possible, if you had like 3 months, you know, get dropped off there, you know, at the end of March, which would be like chilly. But, you know, just spend like 2 or 3 months there if you had the time. And just climb shitloads of stuff. And, you know, because then you're, the longer you are, the longer you're there, the more you climb, the more you're dividing up the cost of getting there. You know, if you spend, you know, 10 grand, and you don't climb anything, you know, that's, you didn't get anything for your money, really. You got the experience of failing, but you could do that a lot cheaper. But, you know, if you go to Alaska and you climb 5 peaks and, you know, explore around, you know, for future trips, you know, that's like a really good investment of your money. But I guess like another question is how, like, do you want to go climbing or do you want to go sitting around trying to climb? So like mountaineering is, you know, it's not a good investment in terms of time or money. But if you want to go climbing, then especially this, I think Frank lived in Canada, you know, I would just go find, you know, just go rock climbing somewhere, like go to the Sierras, I think is like the premier place to go climbing in the world, I reckon. You know, you've got Yosemite Valley, Tuolumne, you know, you could go there, you could climb, you know, all kind of routes, big walls, like alpine routes. You're not gonna do any ice climbing or that kind of stuff. But you just get, you know, shitloads of climbing done. The same in with ice climbing, just go to Canada, just ice climbing Canada, just go somewhere for, you know, extended period, just get shitloads of climbing in, and just get loads of climbing done, rather than going somewhere and just being frustrated by the weather. Because to be honest, the mountaineering just doesn't make, it's just not conducive to being happy. It's just frustrating, and, you know, it's just frustrating. And I think as you get older, like I'm 51, you realise how much of your life was wasted just sitting around trying to climb something that really doesn't really warrant that amount of effort. You know, like someone spending like 10 years of their life trying to climb a fucking boulder, like a two-move boulder problem, is almost a better use of their time, I guess. You know, so I think you need to really decide what you want to do. What your aim is in life. Like if you want to go and climb, you know, Everest or whatever, then it's a different set of skills. If you just want to get really good at rock climbing, if you want to get really fast at rock climbing, you know, really efficient, if you want to be a good all-rounder, then you just need to kind of go to places where you can, you know, you can get good at all these things, but maybe not in the one place. Like people often spend, because they can't go where, they spend too much money on the stuff that they think they might need when they're there, which just means you're spending the money that you could have used to go where. You know, you've got all the kit, but you can't afford to go away anymore. So, you know, you can generally beg or borrow, pick up stuff secondhand, make do with the stuff you've got. Like Frank was in the army, he's probably got all sorts of stuff that's, you know, you can use for there. And try not to get too bogged down in having like the state-of-the-art gear. Like some things are handy to have, but, you know, with a kind of small amount of gear, you could go to a lot of places, do a lot of things. You could probably kit yourself out in a second-hand shop to climb Denali or something. You know, you don't need, well, not about boots, but, you know, your clothing and stuff. You know, you can make stuff. You know, it can become part of the fun of it, of trying to do it, you know, as efficiently as possible. And not lose the fuel, you know, because like if you're wearing, you know, the thing about money, like money is fuel, you know, like fuel, it can fuel you not working, So if you build up enough money, that's like fuel that you can, you know, you can slowly burn that up by when you're not working, or you can burn it up by buying things because you are working to make you feel better about, you know, like a job you don't enjoy or whatever. I guess the most important thing is having like a partner or partners who you want to go away with, who share the similar kind of idea of what you want to do. And that's kind of tough, but if say if you went to Yosemite, or you went to, you know, Squamish, or you went to one of these, you know, places, Chamonix Valley, if you're like keen and motivated, you would soon identify, or you'd be identified by other people, of being someone who is like an ally to getting shit done, basically. And then you start meeting people who are like, oh, do you want to go and do this, and do you want to go on an expedition, you know. But if you're a glaciologist, they'd be like, oh great, I can do the science. Like, what kind of science? Doesn't matter, I just do the science. You can go out there and get paid to, you know, swing a sock around your head and all that kind of stuff. So I think maybe if you have in your mind that an expedition is this thing that's a big deal, then that could like be really limiting. Because really it's not. You know, you could just book a flight tomorrow. You know, you could book a flight to Alaska tomorrow and pack your bags today. You know, go out there and spend a day in Anchorage, buy all your food, ring up the, you know, get them to fly you in. You know, you dropped in on some glacier, away you go. You know, you're on your expedition, and you know it's not going to be as cheap as just getting a flight to California and getting on the bus to Yosemite, getting off and like living dirt bag. You know, like not paying any camping and living in the woods and that kind of stuff. That's like super, super cheap. Or like a Rapalese, rock climbing, I think a Rapalese is like the place to go. Like, just go there for like 3 months, just living in the campsite. You know, so it's, there's loads of ways to do it, but I think you just have to identify what you really want to do. And don't get too distracted by classical ideas of what's, you know, of being this thing or that other thing. You know, if you want to be the next like Alex Lowe, or you want to be Comrade Anchor or Alex Honnold, or what, that kind of stuff, like, you'd probably be like that already. you won't be asking the question. So you're wanting to do stuff that's in a similar vein, and maybe also try and factor in, is it going to be fun? Like, is it going to be a great trip, as in, even if we don't get to the top? Like, if you went to go and climb Kilimanjaro, like, if you're a Canadian, like, going to Africa and stuff would be super cool. You might say, I want to go and climb Kilimanjaro, Mount Kenya, and you know, some other stuff, and you know, you'd have such an amazing time. And you know, none of the things you climb would be like the stuff you get in, like, you know, a climbing magazine would have it on the front cover, but unless you're doing science. And you know, so it's you know, but you could have like an amazing time and a good laugh and good fun and all that kind of stuff, and see some cool stuff. And you know, it'd be really you can either have these like trophy cabinets in your trophy cabinet of life that look really impressive, but really they're like plastic. Or you can have these like like a half melted, battered, cracked plastic cup, you know, that actually means something to you. So, you know, it doesn't mean anything to anybody else, but you know, it means something to you. So yeah, I think just try and work out what you want to do. And maybe it could be something that doesn't involve climbing at all. You know, maybe you could look at other kind of, you know, adventures, you know, kayaking, trying to get on a yacht, you know, see if you can get a, you know, job on a yacht, you know, crewing on a yacht, going across the Atlantic, or, you know, there's all sorts of stuff in your own for your own back garden. Like, there's a trip here I want to do where literally just take my kayak down to the end of the garden, put it into the bay, kayak up the coast, and you, like, it's probably quite a long way, like 30, 40 kilometers along the coastline, and then you go up a fjord, and then you can cross over like a mountain pass. You have to put your kayak on some wheels. You can put it over this, go over this mountain pass, and then you get into like a river, and that river goes into the Loch Corrib, which is the biggest, I think it's the biggest loch in Ireland, one of the biggest lochs in Europe. And then from the Loch Corrib, you can go all the way down the river, down to Galway, and then from Galway, you paddle back along the coast, straight back to my house. But so you're like a big, like full Irish, I call it. And, you know, so that's something where it doesn't really, apart from the time of not, you know, it'd be kind of a cool thing to do that's kind of cheap to do, and would be maybe just as much fun or just as interesting as going to, you know, Namibia or some exotic location. So yeah, so that's that would be my advice. So I'm getting to the bit now where I have to go back on the road because there's like an inlet here. So I can't get over the inlet. Well, I could, but I have to swim across. So I've got like a few people I'm going to do podcasts with. One is Brian Hall, who is a kind of famous. He's kind of like the Keith Richards of 70s and 80s sort of mountaineering, in that he was climbing with lots of famous people like Doug Scott and all those kind of people, Al Rouse and everybody. So, but then he became a mountain guide. And then he actually started working as like a safety person on loads of famous like films like Everest and all those kind of things. So he's written a book, so he's like a friend of mine. So I'm going to do a podcast with him. And I also want to do a podcast with Dave McLeod about diet. Because Dave's got really into sort of carnivore diet, which I know it sounds, it's like, oh God, here we go. You know, it's the thing. But like Dave, I think it's interesting to talk to Dave about it, because Dave is, I always joke that Dave makes climbing boring, because he's so good. Like, I've known Dave since he was about, I think he was like 19, I think, when I first met him. He was at university, so I've known him kind of all our lives, really. So, but you know, he's so like low key, you know, he's a very, very sort of stable kind of person. He's not flamboyant at all. He's Scottish, but that's why. But yeah, so he sort of did a comment about being, you know, carnivore diet, and I thought it was quite a bold thing to do these days, because climbing, everyone's, you know, vegan and all that kind of stuff. So to put yourself out there that you think this is, you know, a lot of health benefits for him. I think it'd just be interesting to talk to Dave about his views on this kind of thing, because he's done like a, I think he's done like a master's, so he's kind of put the work in, done a master's in sports nutrition or something. So if you've got any questions, any feedback, I don't really care about feedback, send me some more questions. I've got a load of questions that I need to do. So I'll slowly get through them. And I apologise for any windy sound effects. I'll get some kind of gadget to go for the microphone. It's got like a little gadget, but it doesn't seem to work that well. And it's getting into the winter time. So maybe I'll have this new baby soon. So that might give me some opportunity for doing more outdoor BBC Radio 4 walking with Andy. One of my number one recommendations, if you've not heard it, is get the Alan Partridge audiobook version of his book where he's basically walking with my father, or it is like really is hilarious, especially if you're into outdoory stuff. Highly recommended. When you go on your expedition stroke holiday, Frank, stuff like that's very important on a trip, actually, a long trip, is some good podcasts, good audio books. That kind of material can really make or break, these kind of things. So, until next time, see you later.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.